I have spoken my mind about what a farce Deflategate is. I've spoken my mind. I haven't heard a single word from 345 Park Avenue on this front. When I started there, the assumption of the SportsCenter viewer was that you had not seen the event that we were putting into a highlight form for you to consume, or you had seen it once, wanted to see it again, and that's it. Sometimes in this world, it's okay to have no opinion. And it's okay for your opinion to be, you know what? Steph Curry was the MVP of the season, but LeBron James was the MVP of the finals, and both of them had incredible seasons. It's fine.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Bette Marston. And this week, we have the NFL Network host and the Premier Radio Network host, Rich Eisen. You could also hear him on iHeartRadio. He is the guest this week, the signature face of the NFL Network. You've seen him on their draft coverage. You see him Sunday mornings. Really, really developed into, I think, one of the excellent studio hosts in this country. So I'm excited to talk about him. Rich is a good guy to talk to now because he, you know, as most people who will listen to this know, he started ESPN, or at least nationally. And he'll have a really interesting, I think, opinion on where that network is and how it can compete in the sort of the highlight, the social media highlight age, widget SportsCenter. We'll talk about what Rich does on a daily basis at the NFL Network. And he's got a lot on his plate with the radio show, so sort of just how he manages his time there. He's a Michigan guy. I'm sure that will come up as well. In addition to his now, might even be 10,000 retweets. Rich Eisen basically went off correctly on Skip Bayless and got 10,000 retweets for his comment. And the comment, sort of to paraphrase, was basically like, you've made your entire career trolling LeBron James, and he just shoved it up your you-know-what by winning. Correctly, I would say Rich Eisen said that. So we'll bring all this stuff up. Very excited to have him on. He is somewhere in Southern California. So without further ado, from beautiful Los Angeles, California, Rich Eisen, thank you very much for joining the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
Rich, let's start here. As the face of a league-owned network, how do you handle when you personally disagree with something the league office does? And you are either on the air on either the NFL Network or one of your or on your radio program. Is there ever is that a tough thing to manage between?
No, I give my two cents. I give my thoughts. I'm myself, you know. And that if you're wondering if there's any directive, the one directive I was given by Roger Goodell, twice, as a matter of fact, was to be myself and speak my mind. I can give you the two instances if you wish.
Sure, please.
It was before we launched. I was just about a month removed from my ESPN tenure, getting ready for my first of three stints with CBS for the U.S. Open, hosting their late night show and then calling some events on Labor Day weekend, which I loved, by the way. Loved calling tennis for them. But and I got a call from on myself from the league office, from the office of Roger Goodell, and I'll be very honest with you, I did not know who the COO of the NFL was. And I called up Steve Bornstein, who was my boss at ESPN and the one who hired me at the NFL Network, and I said, hey, I got a call from an executive from the NFL. And he said, who is it? And I said, Roger Goodell. He says, hang up the phone for me and call him back. So I did that. And we chatted nicely, and he invited me to go play golf, as a matter of fact. And we played a round, and then right around like hole 12, he turns to me when I was in the bunker. I'll never forget it. He says to me, look, you know, you were just to understand this. You were hired to do a job for the NFL, and there may be some forces, maybe some people who will want you to say one thing or maybe not, and try and through a second party or what have you, try and influence. And if there's any problem on any front that you ever have, I don't think you will, because we've told everybody to leave the network alone. But if you have any problem, call me. This is what he said to me. And I said, well, that's great. You got it. And I never really had to call him ever on that subject. And then, so I went off to, you know, the West Coast and helped launch the NFL Network and never really gave it another thought, to be very honest with you, Richard. I mean, and the other time, perfect example, this was during the lockout. I mean, talk about your nuclear winter when the most money is on the line and the largest piece of the NFL future is in flux, like no other time, quite, you know, if you think about it. At any rate, he's coming on NFL Total Access. We're pre-taping an interview, and it's on the day that the NFL Players Association the news was the Players Association was reaching out to potential draftees to tell them not to go to Radio City Music Hall to, you know, I guess make the draft be an empty, hollow event, which, to be honest with you, for fans, it kind of was going to be too, because you didn't know if there was going to be a season. You had no idea what system these draftees would be in terms of signing bonuses and whatever. But I remember I'm pre-taping an interview with the commissioner, and the first question I have out of the gate is, you know, the Players Association is saying that the NFL is, you know, a lot, you know, better off than it is, and you say that it isn't. So why, if opening the books bolsters your point, why not open the books?
Right.
And the commissioner says, you know, first answer goes, wow, Rich, that's quite a first question. And then began to answer it. And believe it or not, there was a technical glitch that caused us to bust the interview and start again. You know, and I was really, you know, pissed about that, to be honest, because here I am asking a question that to me got straight to the heart of matter. So I started again and then started with the question of the news of the day. Eventually did get to that question again, you know, just to switch it up. And I got an email later in the day from the commissioner saying, hey, you know, I noticed when we restarted the interview, you did not ask the first question you asked the first time as the first question the second time. And I just want you to know that my reaction to it saying, well, that was a tough question. I hope you didn't take that as to mean that I didn't want you to ask that. It's your job to ask me whatever you want. So go for it next time, just in case that was the reason why, you know, and keep up the good work and we'll chat soon. And I mean, that's all you really need to know. I know what his public, you know, perception might be for fans and about how, you know, we're muzzled or what have you. I honestly have never really sensed that for now 13 years.
That's interesting. Two interesting stories. Do you feel like you have that same freedom with issues, player safety and health issues, CTE, concussions, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, on this show, I've talked about the movie Concussion, which people consider to be a taboo subject. I mean, I have talked about how, you know, I have hesitancy of my own children, my own two boys, if they want to play football, about what a conflict that would be for me. About how, you know, in the 90s, the league clearly was not on it, and I think the league has made strides on that front. Can it be improved? I'm sure it can be. But yeah, I mean, I speak my mind all the time. I've never had my so-called wrist slapped. On this show that I do every day on DirecTV and Fox Sports Radio and the whole platform that does include streamed live on NFL Now, it's shown on the front page of NFL.com every day, and it's on the NFL mobile app every day. I mean, I have spoken my mind about what a farce Deflategate is. How it was, you know, an insane venture from the beginning, and how out of control it has gotten. I've spoken my mind. I haven't heard a single word from 345 Park Avenue on this front.
Rich,
period.
It's interesting. You, I don't know how you feel about this, and if you've thought about this, but you, I think at the time, took a pretty big leap of faith to join the NFL Network, leaving ESPN, especially given ESPN's place at that time in the marketplace, essentially, you know, an ATM spitting out money. And now I wonder, 13 years later, as you mentioned, I don't think – do you ever think about what your career would have been at ESPN? And I would argue it would not be as big and successful as it is now. Have you ever thought about, had you stayed in Bristol, what you might be doing today there?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Just seeing how, you know, when I – not that it's because what's gone on in my career has caused me to wonder about the road not taken. My wife and I talk about it all the time. I mean, I met my wife in the newsroom at ESPN in 1997.
Wow.
So she is as well-versed in the politics and everything that went down with me and everything that ESPN has become. And, you know, we have a lot of friends who were let go in that big layoff several months ago.
And, yeah.
And at any rate, we talk about it from time to time. I mean, my option to stay, if I stayed, was to do cold pizza.
Oh, God.
You know, which appealed to me only in the slightest bit because it was in New York. You know, and as you know, that was moved from New York City to Bristol pretty darn fast. So, you know, but it really wasn't even an option, Richard, to be honest with you. I mean, that was what the last offer from the Mark Shapiro run operation at the time was, but it was a different, you know, ES Sports Center is a totally different beast than when I first started. 96, when I first walked in the door there, I mean, Sports Center, when I first was hired, when my tape got found by a headhunter that was working with Al Jaffe at the time, he told me that, you know, a really important shop was interested in my work, but to send my best written material because they were really stressing the written word from their on-air people. I mean, think about it.
Oberman, right, Patrick.
So, right. And at the time also, Kilborn was doing,
yeah,
you know, fantastic lead-ins with William Shatner over his shoulder.
Right.
You know, but the 6 o'clock Sports Center was Robin Roberts and Bob Lee and Charlie Steiner were the regulars for that. So, I mean, it was all about the written word. So that's what I sent, and I got the gig. But the reason why I mentioned this is that when I started there, the assumption of the Sports Center viewer was that you had not seen the event that we were putting into a highlight form for you to consume, or you had seen it once, wanted to see it again, and that's it. Or maybe I guess the third one is that hadn't seen it, you didn't even know the result. And so the way the show was is we were fashioning an on-camera lead-in to suck you into a highlight, either in an entertaining way or to tease the information, and then have a highlight that lasted somewhere between 90 seconds to 2 minutes, depending on the importance of the game, and have fun with it and banter back and forth with an anchor. And by the time I left, the assumption was no longer any of that. The assumption was that you definitely had seen it, and you were tuning in to find out, instead of what happened, you were trying to find out why something happened. And not only why something happened, but you needed to get that in the format of two analysts that were put into a crossfire-type situation, and now I'm the mediator of this. It was a totally different story than when I first started SportsCenter. And then you got that bottom line that everybody started using after the events at 9/11. I believe CNN was the first to use the ticker at the bottom of the screen, and ESPN adopted that also. And I think I might have been the only Sports Center anchor that walked into the offices of the powers that be to say, can we just figure out how to work the technology so when I'm on camera leading into a highlight of game A, the result of game A is not shown at the bottom of the screen.
Right.
Can we sync this up somehow? And the answer was no. So I was beginning to chafe at the whole endeavor, to be honest with you. And Shapiro was of the mindset of anybody who was doing SportsCenter at the time. That's what they had to do. Everybody had their roles, and SportsCenter anchors, you know, no longer could go cover event X, Y, and Z physically at the spot, that they wanted to keep them just as, this is what you do. You do 120 some odd sports centers, 160 some odd sports centers a year, and that's it. And, you know, I kind of didn't want to do that anymore. I realized that ABC was becoming more of an important part of the equation, and then there was a lot of the tools to play with in the Disney box, and, you know, we butted heads, I guess, on that front, and so started my NFL Network career.
All right, I think you're a very good observer from afar on this stuff, because you're removed enough where you're not in the belly of the beast and you know, whatever the emotion was is, you know, sort of long gone. We're talking about 13 years. But at the same time, you went through it. You have friends there, and you went through the Sports Center experience. So when you see that brand today, and then eventually I want to ask you about Bayless, because obviously your comments were heroic, I would say. But I'll use that one. So Sports Center, interestingly enough, in a time where they are losing ratings, and they are in trouble because the highlight has changed, they've gone back to really trying to push personality-driven sports centers. Now, with Scott Van Pelt, it works great. That is a unique show. I think he's an immensely talented guy.
Agreed.
I think the numbers will eventually be there. The numbers are up the last month. But that whatever that is, that to me is what the template should be. But respectfully to the other sports center anchors, it does not necessarily work in every day part the way it does with Van Pelt.
So well, it's because just use your word, or just listen to it, just every day part, because it's on every day part.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's it. Maybe the problem
is
too much.
A sports center used to be appointment viewing because you could make an appointment to view it.
Hmm.
Now I look up, I'm you know, because I'm watching a lot of stuff as I'm doing my daily show every day, just to make sure that, you know, I've got the DirecTV sports mix up most of the time just to see if I'm missing anything. Certainly, if there's an actual sporting event going on, I have it up. I'm looking up at the box for ESPN. It's SportsCenter from 12 to 3 in the afternoon,
right.
Eastern. That never used to happen. There used to be the 6 o'clock. Now, again, I might sound like the old guard, right? That's been talking about those newfangled Steph Curry Warriors. I may sound like those old guard players from the 80s and 90s never used to be that way. But, I mean, if it's on all the time, why would it be special to view into it? That's why Van Pelt stands out, because it stands out from the rest of the sports centers. And also because Van Pelt is superbly talented, as there are many very, very talented sports center anchors that do the gig right now. But, I mean, how can you tell the difference sometimes between what's on at 8 in the morning and what's on at 12 o'clock in the afternoon? Now you got something called Sports Center on at all times of the day. It's a different story. It's like when I first got there, all Olbermann was telling me, he was all over me, as a matter of fact, and he was right, is less is more. So when more becomes more, it actually waters down the whole product, if you think about it. I mean, everybody still wants to have highlights delivered, I think, in an entertaining fashion. Maybe I'm biased because of what I do for a living, but I tune into regular sports centers sometimes, and I watch them, and I find myself entertained by it. But, you know, and then you tune on 2 hours later, and then there's two other people doing it, and then you tune into another channel, and they're doing the same thing, and there's two other people doing it. It's kind of difficult for it to stand out.
One of the great sports stories, certainly in my lifetime, the Cleveland Cavaliers are NBA champions, and LeBron James fulfills his vow to Northeast Ohio to bring a championship to a championship-starved region. It's been an emotional roller coaster for Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver, but they have just enough left for one more playoff episode of the Open Floor podcast. I believe that's already out. And you can find that on si.com/podcasts or search for Open Floor on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite app. So, Rich, I want to get your thoughts on this. FS1 is making a counter-argument to this. Maybe I'm even giving them more credit. But they've made it clear that they believe the way to challenge a Sports Center-like operation, or ESPN, is to do it through opinion-based programming. And you get opinionators to go out and to give their takes, and then you use your social media tools to push that out to the marketplace. And you're trying to not only get viewership on over-the-air TV, but you want to get, you know, what the marketers love is social media buzz and side door traffic, et cetera. Both of us have been very critical of one of their recent hires, Skip Bayless. I think both of us are in incredible agreement here. You tweeted out not too long ago, LeBron James and Skip Bayless's career at ESPN that he built by trolling on him, by shutting him the F up. I mean, you know, there's never been a guy.
That was on Father's Day. That was a very long Father's Day, Richard. You know, you've got two young, beautiful twins there.
Right.
There might have been a little daddy juice involved in that at the time.
Thank God for that.
After a long day. But I always hover the finger over before I hit the send. But I just said, screw it. Yeah, I just hit send on that one.
Again, bravo. Your church. I consider that your Churchill moment on Twitter, Rich. But it's a long preamble to get to the point. Two points.
Sure.
One, I think we both agree that Bayless has perpetuated a long fraud on the audience. But listen, you know, he's made money, and there always will be an audience for that kind of nonsense. And that's that. But the larger question to me is, he's going to move over to FS1, and it's always fascinating for me to talk to people in the business about how much of that kind of content is appealing versus is it only appealing on ESPN, which has a 30-year head start and which is the de facto program in people's homes?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, I can only speak from experience on a couple of things. First, in terms of starting over after ESPN or starting anew, okay? I mean, when ESPN, when I left them, I guess they were in over 100 million homes,
right.
And then I went to a universe where it was just 11, 12 million homes. I never really obsessed about how many people are watching me, because I was more attuned to trying to do something that I enjoyed. To build something was definitely a prideful endeavor. Certainly with people you really respected and start from scratch, and to build something up from the very beginning. Rewarding, no question about that. And then there would be times when people would come up to me and say they watch me every day, and I ask them what system do you have? They say Time Warner Cable. I'm like, well, you don't watch me every day because the NFL Network's not on Time Warner Cable. And this would be like 2 years later. They'd be like, what do you mean? I watch you on SportsCenter every day. I'm like, I haven't been on there for 2 years. You know, one time when I went first got here to LA, it was the All-Star Game. The following February was in Staples, and they went up and had the same conversation as somebody who swore they watched me every day. I'm like, no, I'm not on ESPN anymore. And he would look at me, and he did say this to me, Richie. He goes, are you all right? That's what he said. Are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, I can fog up a mirror for you. It's proof to you I'm okay. So that there is, you know, a stressful aspect to starting anew, no longer having that ESPN platform to boost the frequency in the signal. I mean, that is definitely something that is difficult to wrap your arms around. But if you have something that you find rewarding and it's an endeavor that you can grow, then that's terrific. And that is obviously something that Skip is going to do. Now, as for opinionating being a currency that works, I have from 96 to when this show at DirecTV, where I'm calling you from right now, started 2014, that's all I did was be suited and booted on a set and set up an analyst. That's all I did for a television living, whenever, other than a handful of times I got to call baseball games on ESPN and that aforementioned U.S. Open venture. So to do this here now, where I'm now in a world of sports talk radio where opinions are not only currency, it is the engine, right? It's an opinion-based format.
Right.
I find myself sometimes, you know, having conversations with some of my producers here about, you know, people are talking about this, you should talk about it. And I have honestly no opinion. And the last thing I'm going to do is get out there and have an opinion on something that doesn't come from the gut. And that is the point of why I have an issue with the opinion-based programs, is because sometimes in this world, it's okay to have no opinion. And it's okay for your opinion to be, you know what? Steph Curry was the MVP of the season, but LeBron James was the MVP of the finals, and both of them had incredible seasons, and
right.
Both have fan bases that are worthy of the praise and the adulation that they give and receive for being the fans. It's fine. It's fine. We can live. That this world can survive with that stuff. I don't need, as Van Pelt, when he came on my show the other day, he said, to put the crying Jordan meme on everybody who's on the losing side of the scoreboard. And that's just the part of the world that I just don't want to be a part of, the sports world. It's not part of my DNA. I don't want to be part of it. And to do a show like this, if I have an opinion, it's going to come from the gut, and it's going to be something that I care about. Because sometimes I sit there and think, like, you know, maybe even something that I care about, I'm concerned that you, the consumer, don't even care what I'm thinking. So I'm not going to sit here and think that I'm sitting on a mount and every word that comes out of my mouth that's an opinion is right, and you should respect my words because I am an opinionator. I can't stand that format, and that's what Skip is. That's what other people in this business are, and they have made a great living off of it, and more power to them. I'm just not going to be one of those people. I don't have to respect it, but I do respect the interest in people that they have for this, because that tweet that you're talking about that I threw out there about Skip is the most retweeted or favorited tweet I've put out in the 8 years by a factor of 10 times 10.
Wow.
I've never seen numbers on a tweet that I've sent out before. Now, part of it might be because I don't usually tweet somebody shutting the F up. You know, I mean, that might be against my type or whatever that is. But it's popular, and that's why FS1 might be going all the way in on it. You know, I'm just not into it. I'm not into that. I like nuance. Not everything needs to be black and white. There's a gray. That's why people, you know, that's what this life's about, right? I like chocolate. You like vanilla. We can still hang.
Right.
That's all.
That's well said. You, it's interesting though, for your radio show though, Rich, you do have a partnership with Fox Sports Radio. I shouldn't guess on this.
Well, it's Premier Radio, and you know, I'm still 19 months into this, learning the radio business myself, Richard. You know, I believe Premier licenses the name Fox Sports Radio.
Gotcha.
It's really Premier Radio Networks. There's iHeart Radio involved in this mix too. My show is on Sirius and XM Radio. It's 180 cities, 150 affiliates, and that's the thing I'm really liking about this too. Is maybe it's also part of my stand-up comedy days where I do miss, you know, a live audience reaction from having done stand-up back in college at our beloved Michigan.
Right.
You know, I miss the interaction. So I do like the phone lines lighting up, and even if the opinions come back and they're boring or they drag the show down, somebody still has picked up the phone and wanting to talk, right? And I respect that, and I really appreciate that. And certainly in this day and age where everybody in our business is trying to figure out how are we going to connect with the fans, and even more importantly, how do we connect with the fans through social media? Nothing beats the one-on-one conversation of you say something, I say something, we connect, we agree, we disagree, we're still friends, call back. And I love that about this format. I'm really enjoying that.
Do you consider Coward a competitor because you were on at the same time? And
yeah, of course. I'm sure he considers me one too.
It's interesting. But you both are sort of connected to the same.
We're in the same, yeah. Premier hired us both.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I mean, there's enough radio waves out there for everybody. But I don't know. I mean, I would consider he would think that. But I'm also sure he's doing what I'm doing, which is like focusing on the 3 hours I have in front of me.
Right.
Putting out a product that I'm not only proud of, but I think is an extension of me. You know what I mean? And I know that may sound, it may come across as egotistical, like an extension of it. It does sound like something that Reggie Jackson would say, like the extension of me. But, you know, it is stuff that I'm interested in and like. But I talked, you know, like, for instance, Elvis Dumervil is going to come on next Tuesday. He's coming on because he's going to Haiti this weekend.
Wow.
To go check on some of the houses that he's building there. And so we, you know, get a call. Hey, do you want Elvis Dumervil to come on? Now, Elvis is on the Ravens, who, as we all know, finished in the bottom 10 in the NFL. And what is he? Has he lit up the sack total? Not really. But he's an NFL player who in this day and age has taken time in his final weeks before he's got to go to camp and live like a football player. He's going to Haiti. I respect that. He wants to come on and talk about it. I got it. I also have Bryan Cranston on that show. That's the type of show that I want to have in studio. I'll talk about Breaking Bad and his new movie with him. And if he's an LA Rams fan, we'll mix a little sports in, but talking to football players about stuff. Now you might click it off because like, why do I care about what's going on in Haiti? You know, if I lose you as a viewer or a listener, I guess that's that's on me, but I'm still going to talk about something that interests me that I hope would interest the viewer or listener.
Rich, I want to take you into the NFL regular season because I'm interested in sort of how what your consumption is. So you let's start with Monday. You're obviously going to be on the air. You're obviously going to be on the air Sunday, and that's going to be a loaded day. You're doing your morning stuff and you're watching during the day. But can you start with Monday and just give me a sense of what the preparation is for the week?
Oh,
that
sure.
Leads to
Sunday? Well, I mean, Monday, just so let's say in between weeks 1 and 2 of the season, because Monday before week 1 of the season is Labor Day.
Right.
So Monday, I guess that'll be September 12th. I will be right here at DirecTV getting ready for my show from 9 to 12 out here Pacific time. And getting all my ducks in a row to talk about what will be no doubt a wild Sunday night game between either Brady or Garoppolo against the Arizona Cardinals, as well as the rest of the day from football over the weekend, if not any college from the Saturday. And then you have that Monday night doubleheader. We'll be talking a lot about that. And the 3 hours will probably blink and go by fast. Then comes Tuesday, I'll come back here and do that show again for DirecTV, at which point I will be trying to catch a breath, because Tuesday is kind of a day before the storm, because Wednesday I'll do my show here at DirecTV and then go to the NFL Network as part of our pre-show meeting for Thursday night football. I forget what our first Thursday night game of the year is going to be, but then on that Thursday, I'll do this show at DirecTV and, the radio show. And then as soon as it is over, I will zip up the 405 and go to another meeting, put on a suit, do the pregame show for the first Thursday night game, halftime, postgame, then, maybe play a little poker with my buddies if I can get in about an hour. And then Friday, I'll do this show again. Saturday, we'll be spending some time with the kids in the morning, and then Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock every Saturday is the NFL game day morning meeting, which is about half as long as the show, which is 4 hours long on Sunday. Saturday is 2 hours, and it's just a great time where I sit in the back of the room and listen to Irvin and Kurt and Marshall and Mooch do their thing. And, I make suggestions on the rundown. I make suggestions on some topics, but my job is to essentially listen to what the four analysts are going to say, so I can maybe poke and prod them into that direction if need be when we're on the air live Sunday, for which I get to direct to NFL Network around 4 in the morning because we're on the air at 6.
Right.
And then that show's done at 10, and then I'll watch the game, so I'm well-versed for the Monday show and do it all over again until the Super Bowl.
It's a lot of consumption. Do you, at this point in your career, Rich, are you still watching yourself and your work, or do you – not to say you ever feel like 100% confident in your job, but is there no longer value in you watching yourself on TV as a lot of certainly younger broadcasters do?
No, I mean, I will watch back certain interviews that I do, but I'm on the radio TV show because, again, still 3 hours a day, 15 hours a week for something that I've been doing now for 19 months is still a very relatively new endeavor. My wife who Susie listens to the show quite a bit sometimes when she can in between what she's doing, she's always after me about don't ask yes or no questions.
Right, so, open-ended. Right.
I will watch things back with my wife, who has sat in on the show to fill in for me when I do get a day off every now and then or I need to take a step and do something else for the NFL Network. So, I mean, I'll do that from time to time for this one, but I can't remember the last time. If I did it for the NFL Network, I would feel like Larry Sanders. Remember that when Larry Sanders used to watch his shows back?
Right, yeah.
That one. But this one, I'm still, taking notes on myself from time to time doing that here, yeah.
One of the things that's a very big part of your job, and I think you do it exceptionally well, and Ernie Johnson does it well, and James Brown does it well. It's to allow the analysts some space, some landing to make their points, to feel comfortable in their points, and to star. You have to work with many. You have to work with you have a set crew, obviously, on Sunday, but you've worked with many different analysts over the years. The draft crew is different on those 3 days. So how do you what's the best way to phrase this? How do you find chemistry in a short amount of time with your analysts? And do you often – are there things that happen behind the scenes that make it easier on camera?
I'll take that second part first. Michael Irvin was at my wedding because Susie, my wife, knew him from Fox Sports when they worked together. So Michael Irvin wore an electric blue tuxedo to my wedding. Steve Mariucci, before he started at the NFL Network, I ran into him in front of the Pantheon with his wife on vacation with mine.
Yeah, nice.
Marshall Faulk, I consider one of my best friends in the world. Kurt Warner is a sweetheart. I mean, he is really, truly one of the best people I've ever come across. From just the way he goes about his business to the fact that when I drop an F-bomb in a meeting, he doesn't stare me down, even though I do see him wince every now and then when I do that. You know, I mean, his wife, Brenda, will call me up on the phone and, you know, give me some very nice kudos about what happened on the show. And, you know, when I had my baby naming, my wife and I had our third kid. We had a girl. And we had to have the baby naming because she was born right before the football season. We had to have her on a Saturday. We had to have the baby naming on a Saturday because the football Sunday wouldn't work. So the rabbi who we got on the Sabbath, it was tough to find one to do this thing, said her ceremony was to have a member of the you know family speak at the end, and instead of having a member of Susie's family or my family speak at the end, we both agreed it had to be Michael Irvin. And Irv spoke at the baby naming and gave such an impassioned speech about the meaning of family and fatherhood and how important it is, certainly how he knows a lot of people who didn't grow up with a father. And I mean, people were moved, and that's the sort of stuff. So when Irvin goes on an extra minute blowing past the stop sign of the producer that we're all hearing in our ear and maybe eating into the 30 seconds that Marshall would have remaining in the segment, you know, we kind of all know each other and like each other, and we don't take it personally. None of us do. And, you know, we kind of foster all that. Like, we sent a text exchange around to each other on Father's Day, wishing everybody happy Father's Day. You know, Mooch, when he had his grandchild, sent out a picture to all of us, you know, and it might have been too soon when I asked if the grandchild was named Matt Millen Mariucci. That didn't get rid of much of a response, but, you know, it's the type of relationship we have with each other. We really do. So off the air, I think that helps on the air immeasurably, and that's what helps, too, that they've kept us together for so long. I think we're about to do our fifth season together this coming fall, and there's been a lot of contracts up as well over the last several months. So I'm excited about that. That helps. In terms of with people that don't speak at baby namings or I get married, you know, or in front
right,
of.
Or at your wedding, right.
You know, I guess I just take it as it comes and make sure that everybody gets their say and try to make sure that, you know, it's not about me when it comes to it. It's about the viewer getting what they want to hear out of the analyst. And sometimes it's about being prepared, coming in about what they want to say to make sure that they're comfortable enough to say it, I guess, would be the only way to answer that one. I've worked with a ton of people who have done it for the first time. I remember when Trent Dilfer first came off the field and started doing stuff. He did it with the NFL Network, and he was reading stuff off of a piece of paper. He wrote it all out.
Wow.
Like he was going to do a breakdown, you know, filled with spot shadows and, you know, you know, all the bells and whistles with this, you know, the whooshes and the lasers and all that business. And he wrote it down and he timed it out. Like he read the piece of paper and kept looking up at the screen. And I said to him, I'm like, Trent, I'm like, you have more football information. I held up my pinky. I'm like, right here. I pointed the tip of it than I do in my entire body. Why do you? He goes, well, I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to be, you know, I'm like, so just look at it and talk. You know, I mean, it really is, you know, it's difficult if you're not prepared, but it's easy if you know your stuff. So, trying to help out sometimes with analysts who have never done it before, and taking the time and not just saying, you know, sink or swim, I don't care, I'll just do my piece and I'll get in my car and go home. You know, I mean, I don't want to be that guy. I never want to be known as that guy in our business.
Rich, where do you see the NFL Network going the next 5 years in terms of its own evolution, different kinds of programming? The network's not going anywhere. It obviously has live games, and you know, for hardcore fans, they're interested. But every network obviously has to grow. So what do you think the next evolution is for your network?
I don't know. I can tell you what I hope it is. I hope it's moving away from moving towards the entertainment aspect of this. Again, I'm more obviously, you know, when I mentioned to you I'm going to do a show with Elvis Dumervil and Bryan Cranston, there's enough space for that.
Right.
You know, I think that there are, when I see, for instance, the long snapper of the Philadelphia Eagles, John Darnbos, who is advancing in America's Got Talent, I'm like, why can't something like that be on the NFL Network? That's what I think. I just don't know if that's the way it's going to go, if that's what, you know, management would like to do with it. You know, in the meantime, I'll continue doing what I do, and I love it. I love the shows that I do for it. But to me, I'd love to see more original programming that's outside of the box, and I think some other networks are kind of moving towards that. I'd love to see original documentaries.
Yeah.
In addition to what's going on, the NFL Films people are fantastic. They are the greatest.
Yep.
And seeing more in-depth stuff like that. I mean, a Football Life I couldn't be prouder of. I'm happy about this NFL 360 show that the network reached out and wanted me to be a part of. So I'm enjoying that. But I'd love to see original programming on the entertainment side of things. I think that there is an ability to do that. I mean, not like I'm reinventing the wheel. I mean, there are many other shows that do mix sports and entertainment. But, you know, when I first was at my first Super Bowl for the NFL Network, and Justin Timberlake is out there with a wardrobe malfunction, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, so this is now the biggest story. It's bigger than the game in a way. And then the next year, there's Paul McCartney. And then the year after that, there's the Rolling Stones. I'm thinking, okay, it's the largest sporting event that we have in America that we export to the rest of the world. And we're stopping it in the middle for a rock concert. So that's acceptable. Why can't more sports and entertainment being mixed together be acceptable?
Well, as every golf fan knows, Dustin Johnson finally won his first major. Although the U.S. Open win was not without controversy, to hear Sean Zak and Jeff Ritter tell it, the USGA could barely have botched their penalty of Johnson worse, and in the end, it was his own brilliance that bailed everyone out. The Golf.com podcast had a full week of coverage for Oakmont, and that is the podcast you need for all the golf coverage during the year. You can hear it on si.com/podcast or on your podcast app of choice. Just search for the Golf.com podcast. All right, a couple more here, Rich. One of the things that obviously the radio show provides you is it gives you a forum to talk about other sports away from the NFL, issues away from, even issues off the field. You can basically a radio show. You're allowed to do whatever you want, including Bryan Cranston. You could talk about Hamilton if you want. You could do anything. What the one thing about your career at the moment that doesn't really exist is there's not a forum where you, if you have any desire to do any kind of live sports broadcasting that's not the NFL. Is that of interest to you at all before your career is done, whether it's to do some more baseball games, you know, a chance to, I'm just sort of throwing that out, a chance to do the Olympics or just something that that you might have been on the path for back at ESPN, but now because you work for the NFL Network, it's a little trickier to do.
Well, I defy anybody who works in this business to say they wouldn't want to cover an Olympics. I mean, everybody would want to do that. That's for sure. I mean, I did call baseball games. I enjoyed it. I'm blessed to be doing what I really want to enjoy doing. I mean, if I had one thing I would love to do would be doing a show that I'm doing right now like this in front of a live audience. I mean, I really do miss the feedback from a live audience from my stand-up days back in college. For real. I mean, it really influenced me to the point where, you know, look, it's not the job of the people who work on the floor of a show that I'm doing to laugh at my stuff, right? It's not their job. But if I'm looking around and something that I do makes somebody on the set laugh or I get a reaction from it, I don't know. It just gives me a sense of enjoyment. And so I miss the feedback of a live studio audience and would love to do something like that. In the future, that would be a goal, would be to do something in front of a live studio audience.
Would you ever just,
I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. Would you ever just out of the blue, and again, this would be ballsy and maybe you'd have to practice, but would you ever think about just going to a Los Angeles comedy club for fun and just doing a 10-minute set?
Last time I did that, it was years ago because of a guy who I did stand up with at Michigan. I used to do this for Lloyd Carr's Rose Bowl teams. It just sadly gives you an idea of how long last time I did that.
Right.
He would set these things up, and I went up there and I did it. And man, it was just, it wasn't good, you know, because I really, you know, didn't really want to curse a blue streak or anything like that. Certainly in the day and age with like camera phones or whatever. You know, I tried it when I was in ESPN once, but. You know, I've been fortunate to get opportunities to do stuff like The Odd Couple and make cameo appearances because I like popping up in places where like people are like, whoa, I didn't expect to see you there. So I'm enjoying that. But yeah, I think my stand up days are probably like where I do like a 10-minute set, you know, at the improv. I think that might be over.
You were sort of well known for doing a Howard Cosell impression. When is the last time you pulled that out of the hat?
It's been a while because, you know, it's so sad with all these Ollie perspectives. When you saw Cosell, he's been gone so long, right? I mean, it's dated. It's probably like, you know, Rich Little doing a Johnny Carson impersonation. It's been a while since I've done that. But yeah, when I was in school, it was kind of the showstopper, and a friend of mine did it first, and he definitely wasn't going to continue doing it, certainly based on what he does now. He's James Rosen of Fox News.
Wow.
You see him on Fox News. He's, I think he's with the State Department now reporting. But he did that once when he did stand up at a Harvard summer college. He did the Penthouse Forums in Howard Cosell's voice. So I basically did what most comics do, which I sampled. I sampled it, and I did it once a month and on the U Club. It's now, I think, a Cinnabon or something like that, Richard, in the in the university. The main spot down there in Ann Arbor. Why am I blanking on the name right now? Man, I've been talking for 5 straight hours. I'm sorry.
But
anyway, long story short is I used to do it, and this was when it was so popular, they were making Sally Field, Tom Hanks movies out of the endeavor of right. stand-up comedy.
Soapbox? You know? Is that what that's called, right? Do you know? We'll check that out. The Tom Hanks, Sally Field movie. I want to say it's Soapbox, but I could be wrong. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and so people were around the block waiting to get into these places. And so I used to do that as a big finale, and people loved it. They couldn't get, they could not get enough.
Punchline. Yeah, bad job.
Punchline, 1988. Yeah. Wow. That's when I was doing it. I was doing it from the 87 to 90.
Nice. We'll end on a Michigan note here. When is the last time you were back on campus?
Last time I was back on campus was to deliver the commencement address.
Wow.
For the athletes.
Okay.
The athletic department right. decided to do its own, even though they don't, you know, have a degree to give out. They gave out, this was Dave Brandon in his final year on campus there. You really didn't know it at the time. Okay. They gave out compasses to each student athlete that was graduating the day before they were at their actual graduation, and they gave out compasses where the latitude and longitude was all set to the coordinates for Ann Arbor for them to remember where they could go for the rest of their lives. It was really neat, and they wanted me to deliver the commencement address, and I did that, and that was really awesome. That was great.
Yeah, very cool.
So it's been a while since I've been back, but I have not been to a game yet with Harbaugh, who fires me up to no end. I can't wait to do that.
Well, here's the last one for me. And but we are you a, you're a Michigan Daily alum or no? Did you do something? Did you work the radio station during your undergraduate
No,
day?
I did Michigan Daily.
Okay.
I wrote. Schefter was a year before me.
Wow. Good
So
stuff.
Schefter was there, graduated a year before me. And as a matter of fact, I drew the short straw and closed the paper the night that Glenn Rice won the championship. Vermeil hit those free throws. I had to
Right.
run across campus. Everyone's partying. I had to get to the paper to close it and get Schefter's column from Seattle, where they won the championship
Wow.
that year. And I edited Schefter's column and put it in the newspaper.
That's
So I
amazing.
did that. I loved it. I covered Bo's final season.
Wow.
That was an intense experience for me too. Wrote a column, Get Rich Quick was the name of it.
It's
And I loved it.
like
I loved it.
such a good college comp. Did what is Schefter What did Schefter do without a cell phone back then? I mean,
That's a
what was
great
he
question.
checking?
Well, what he did was he I shouldn't use the word. He befriended Mitch Albom. We were all jealous of that, by the way.
Right.
Mitch Albom, the
It was,
king of Michigan
of
sports
course, yeah.
writing.
Yep.
And Mitch Albom took a liking to him. So
Wow.
he didn't need a cell phone. We all knew Schefter was going places when we
He
were there.
had
That's for
Mitch.
sure.
That's all right. So the last thing is, as a Michigan alum, and certainly a well-known Michigan alum in the sports media, do you think the fan base would be happy with consistent top five, top seven team, no title under Harbaugh, or is it ultimately about winning one championship during the whatever the Jim era is?
I think we're all ingrained as Michigan sports fans to just want to win the Big Ten, and if the national championship comes with it, that would be gravy. I would take a win over Ohio State right now. Let's just walk before we can run.
Right.
In terms of, the most professional performance I have ever had, Richard, in my, geez, now 20 years of doing this, my 20th anniversary of my first SportsCenter passed in March. The most professional performance I've ever had in my 20 years was the Friday night of this year's draft in Chicago, where Urban Meyer was on the set for all 5 hours as they set the record for most kids drafted from a school in the first 2 years of a draft.
Right.
And that not a single Michigan guy had been drafted yet. And then Michigan has a guy drafted, and the camera, sits on me. I think my reaction was like, thank you, hallelujah, or something like that. And Urban Meyer sitting right there, smiling like a Cheshire cat. He couldn't have been more professional and classy and nice and all that sort of stuff. He was great. We had a really great time together. But that one, Richard, that was really tough to take. And just say, hey, congratulations, Ohio State, look at you. My gosh. But I sucked it up. I got through it. I survived it.
Well, better times are coming. The problem is Ohio State's not going anywhere. So,
They keep reloading too, but hey, you've got to have somebody who's got a little bit of the crazy to succeed. Look at Alabama, look at Ohio State, and he's our crazy guy. He's out there right now, and he's bringing it, and I love it. I love it. So I think to just, I guess, answer the whole question is that winning the Big Ten championship would be gravy, and obviously staying above board and doing everything by the book, and there's no problems, no sanctions, no nothing. We're just playing football. We're graduating people. We're winning more often than not. And then if you want to be dominant and you want to win championships, that would be the cherry on top.
Yeah, well said, including no nonsense kinesiology, fake degrees, and all that.
Yeah.
Hopefully that nonsense. Oh, but the Big Ten is awesome with Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan with those three coaches. It's going to be great. All right, Rich
Yeah, that's
Eisen
true.
has been kind enough to give us 50 minutes. He is the face, I would say, of the NFL Network. You see him on their Sunday morning pregame show. Obviously, you see him with a lot of draft coverage as well as the NFL draft. And as I have said and written many times, the NFL Network is my pick to go on the first night.
Thank you.
After that, Rich, it might be a toss-up, no offense. But first night, there's that.
Richard, it's your opinion. Like I said,
That is where I'm going.
opinion, there's enough for me and Trey and everybody where there's enough bandwidth. If you like Trey's, whatever, it's all good. I'm a happy
I think
guy.
I think
I love what I
it's
do.
less about Trey. I think it's
And
more about I think it's
I
more about Lewis
appreciate what
Riddick.
you write and when you write it.
Yeah, I
It's
think it's
all
more about
good.
Lewis Riddick now, to be very honest. I like that guy. He's good. Rich Eisen, of course, you catch his radio show in many markets around the country, iHeartRadio, Premier Networks. Am I right about that, Rich? Is the Premier Networks?
Premier Radio Networks.
Premier yep. Radio Networks. Okay. And then you'll see, you know, you may see Rich one day just on the street doing his Cosell imitation because he's really misses
for anyone
them.
Who listen.
Somewhere in Santa Monica. All right, Rich, listen, thank you very much. It's been a long time. I wanted you to be on this podcast
thank
since
you.
We started.
I appreciate you having me, Richard.
And thanks so
thank
much you. And continued success. Bye-bye. Rich Eisen, take thank care. You. All right, back in studio. My thanks to Rich Eisen. I enjoyed that. He's a fun guy to talk to, and you know, he's had a phenomenal career. And just the shift to the NFL Network at the time he did that was no slam dunk. You know, he mentioned that 11 million homes. It was not ESPN at the time, but he's been part of their growth and is far and away the face of that network. And they've made an excellent decision to continue to re-sign him, and they should continue to do that. So my thanks to Rich Eisen. Few previous podcasts, Eli Saslow of the Washington Post was really, really interesting. Brent Musburger, you know, no need to introduce him. That's closing in on 100,000 listens, so thank you very much for checking that out. Upcoming podcasts, Bet, are Rembert Brown, and we have two agents, one from CAA, one from IF Management, talking about the business. I think Rich Eisen will be out first, but if you're hearing this after those others, my apologies. But I think that's the order. All right. My thanks, of course, to Bette Marston and to Alan Kim as well, who also produces this podcast, Dan Bloom of Panoply, Chris Stone, Paul Fichtenbaum, John Wertheim, Ryan Hunt. So, for Bette Marston, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.